Hey everybody, I'm Scott, and this is Food for Thought for Zephaniah chapter 2, verses 4 through 15. So this week, kind of as opposed to last week, we saw the nations, like the neighboring nations of God's people, mentioned, but then most of the time, God was sort of focused in, zeroed in on the judgment that he was going to bring to his people, walking the streets with a lamp of Jerusalem, looking for those that he needs to bring judgment upon. In this one, in this little chunk, we're actually going to see the judgment of the nations brought into a clearer focus, and that's where he's going to spend most of his time. And then on the margins, you'll see him interact with how this affects then his people. So a bit of a reversal from last week. What you're going to encounter as you're reading this text together is lots of names of different cities and people. So Gaza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, Ekron, Canaan, Philistines, Ammonites, Moabites, Cushites, Syrians, all these different people. And what you need to know are these are the neighboring peoples, cities, nations of Judah. So there are the Philistines. That's one group of people. The Moabites and Ammonites, they're another group of people packaged together in this focal passage. The Cushites, which I think just get like a line or two, they're packaged together. And then the Assyrians are packaged together. So you get God addressing these four different groups of neighboring nations together and talking about the judgment that he's going to bring. And I'll save it for when we're actually walking through the content of stuff. But there is some interesting connections to God's covenant promises to his people, in particular, the promised land, to his provision for his people, and also their commission, like their mission to go and have the earth be subdued and to have dominion over creation, all those things. We'll see that as we get into it, but just be mindful as you're kind of reading through this chunk here, the rest of chapter 2, that there are some covenant promises that correlate with the judgment that God is bringing on these neighboring nations. So in terms of content, we see, I think, here that God has a covenant place, he has a covenant people, and he has a covenant purpose for those people, and he uses judgment to fulfill parts of that covenant. So in the first chunk, if we're looking at what he brings against the Philistines, so verses 4 through 7, what we see is that he's bringing this judgment upon the Philistines, but he's not just destroying them. He is ridding them from the land, but then he's also rehabbing that land as well. They're going to be pastures. There's going to be meadows, places where creation can dwell and grow and flourish. And then he's going to replace the Canaanites or the Philistines. He's going to replace them with God's people because the Lord is mindful of his people and is going to restore their fortunes. He says, "The seacoast shall become the possession of the remnant of the house of Judah, on which they shall graze, and in the houses of Ashkelon they shall lie down at the evening." This is their home. God is basically reclaiming and rehabilitating their home for his people, right? And so this is the promised land. God, I don't think it's a coincidence that Zephaniah refers to the Philistines as Canaan. That was the conquest of Canaan when God's people finally got free from Exodus. That's where they were going to. Was this promised land? This is the land that that God wanted for his people to dwell in. And so that covenant name of that place, it's not an accident that it's used here to refer to the people that God wanted to drive out and also the place where he wanted his people to then have a home. So it's a covenant place, and God is using judgment to bring that covenant place back into the possession of God's people. Also, what we see is that God's not going to put up with people disparaging his people. That's what we see with the Moabites and the Ammonites. There's all these tauntings and revilings. People are just talking smack, basically, against God's people. And part of that is probably because God's people have also been not very faithful and not talking well of the Lord either. But he's not going to put up with people talking bad about his people. And so what he's going to do is he's going to, instead of have these enemies surrounding them all the time, taunting them, reviling them, all this, he's going to get rid of them. So he does. That's what he says he's going to do. He's going to destroy them like Sodom and Gomorrah, and then God's people are going to plunder them they're going to, that the survivors of my nation shall possess them. And so there's this, again, if you think of like Canaan, the promised land, as like the most inner part of a circle, then the next kind of circle out would be the Ammonites, the Moabites, that the neighboring nations that are just taunting, reviling the enemies of God's, but they're going to be gone. So they're not going to be neighbored by then all of these enemies at some point that are just talking smack about them. They're going to not have those people there. And also they're going to have the possessions of those people. They're going to be able to plunder them and take that back in to help them thrive and grow. And this is kind of points to the next part then, is that the next couple of groups of people, the Cushites, and in particular the Assyrians. He spends a lot more time with Assyria than he does the Cushites. The Cushites just get a word. He's going to slay them. But then with Assyria, he just talks about laying waste to all of the Assyrians. And there's no like plundering at all. There's no reaping of resources. It's almost like creation just sort of takes back over. It almost feels like an undoing of creation. If it's Assyria who's like one of the superpowers that is taking over and conquering peoples. And so for Assyria to be laid to waste, like the biggest, like strongest, biggest superpower, to be brought to nothing and then have creation take over, it's almost a reversal of creation. It's an undoing of this mandate of like, hey, go subdue the earth. You have dominion over it. Go and make of it what you will. That's being undone in Assyria, and like hedgehogs and owls and herds and all sorts of stuff are taking over. Even Nineveh, which was, I think, on the Tigris, the Tigris River, it talks about a dry waste like the desert. That's what it's going to be made into. Nineveh, which is the capital of Assyria. It's like, well, no, it's by a river, but that's what he's, it's the undoing of this creation and flourishing. And to this end, I think what we see, if we kind of go along with this theme of a promised land and the neighboring nations kind of being brought down and no enemies around, and then this just kind of wilderness that's left around that on maybe the outermost circle, it's this idea that, man, God certainly has a covenant place for his people. He does have a people that he cares about, that he's going to protect and preserve and fight for, but he's given those people a purpose, and that purpose stems all the way back to Genesis, where, again, Adam and Eve, given dominion over all of creation, called to subdue the earth and to fill it. And so what they get now the opportunity to do is then go into Assyria that has been kind of brought back and undone to this untamed creation state. They get to go back into those places and tame it, and regrow it and rebuild it to a place and a people with a purpose that brings God glory. It's an advancement and expansion of the kingdom, which was in some ways a very real thing for them under King Josiah's reign, wanting to expand the kingdom if they possibly could. So that was a tangible thing for them at that point. But for certainly for us, as we look back into creation, we see that mandate's been there all along to be fruitful and multiply, to fill the earth. But then for us as disciple makers, we're called to make mature and multiply disciples of Jesus, to advance the kingdom throughout the earth. And one day, on the day of the Lord, that's cosmic in nature, when Jesus returns, all of our enemies will be gone, and we will have the freedom then to just take the earth, to subdue it in all the ways that we ought to have done back in Genesis, and to make much of God in the process as we grow and as we expand. And so hopefully you can see kind of that that bit of like a covenant connection to the way that God is bringing judgment upon the nations. And he specifically says that God's mindful of his people. He wants to restore their fortunes. The remnant of my people shall plunder them, their enemies, and the survivors shall possess them. So there's a mindfulness and a direct connection to God's covenant faithfulness to his people, and the judgment that God brings about on the nation. So I want you guys to see that, because I think that's pretty interesting and it's not on accident. So a few questions just in relation to this text. First, what is the connection? How do we see the faithfulness of God in his covenant to his people? How is that connected to the judgment that he brings upon neighboring nations, certainly in Zephaniah, but then when we think about the enemies that he has conquered and defeated on the cross, the enemies that he will one day defeat when he comes again, that day of the Lord, that reckoning. How is that connected to his faithful promises to his people? How are those things linked together? And how does that shape the way we view maybe even judgment in the first place and this whole reckoning and day of the Lord stuff? What else kind of seems to stir up God's anger or wrath besides just a flat-out rejection of him? What do we see from this text? There seems to be with the Moabites and with the Ammonites, this protection over God's people. He does not want people to talk smack against God's people. He will not put up with that. And so that draws his ire, and he brings judgment against folks that do that, neighboring nations. And so I think that gets to spur a couple questions in us is, gosh, like, what does that say about our own attitude towards the church and the way that we talk about the church, even as the church? We should not disparage it, slander it. We should talk gently and lovingly and also clearly about Jesus' bride. We shouldn't take that lightly and just speak flippantly, which is so easy to do and so many people do these days. But then also, what does that say about God's care for us as his bride, as his church? He cares about what people say about us and who we are and our reputation and all those sorts of things. He cares about us and will come to our defense and our aid and that stuff. So what does that say? What does it tell us about, what does this maybe in particular, the fact that he's stirred up by this, what's it tell us about the Lord and about us? And then just kind of lastly, like, what do we view as being in the way of God's mission or the Great Commission that Jesus gave us, right? So God is kind of promising to lay waste to the people that are inhabiting the home of God's people. He's going to get rid of the enemies that surround them and resource them with what they need to get the job done. And then he's also going to kind of undo the creation that seemed to be against the Lord and kind of revert it back to a place of, all right, now it's time to go and subdue this place for the glory of God, to fill the earth, subdue it, to have dominion over it. For God's glory as image bearers and certainly now as saints. So what do we view as getting in the way of God's mission, like our Great Commission today to make and mature and multiply disciples, to advance the kingdom? What obstacles do we have, and how is God overcoming those, or how has God overcome those for us in the gospel? And how has he kind of cleared the way for us to go into the world, to go to the nations, baptizing people in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit in order to make mature and multiply new disciples? How is God more powerful, and how has he allowed us to then fulfill our purpose with the Spirit, with the gospel, together with his church, with the scriptures, to go and advance God's kingdom together? So just kind of zooming in, big picture vision for this stuff is that God, he judges the nations for the vindication of his covenant people, that his judgment against the nations is faithfulness to his remnant so that it might grow and expand and thrive. And so God frees us and the gospel to be his covenant people, to gather as his covenant people, to fulfill our covenant purposes, to work towards those things, not perfectly, but he frees us to do that through the gospel itself. I'll leave it at that for you guys for today. Hopefully that's helpful, and I'll see you next time.